Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Here with me now is Michael Shockley, senior writer and webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com for our weekly Iceman Insight segment. Michael, how you doing today?
Fantastic. How about you?
Well, we're 0-6-1. So the bright part is when I said we'd be in the bottom third, I am right on target for that.
That's true. Yeah. I guess I should throw myself under the bus. I said this team could challenge for a playoff spot, but right now I'm thinking I'm more like a Jim Mora playoffs.
But then the flip side is it's a little disappointing right now. So 0-6-1, but I still, it's just going to take time.
Yeah, it's we're only a tenth of the way through the season, so there's still plenty of time. When I talked to Rich after the game on Sunday, I said, "Well, there's nowhere to go but up." He said, "Yeah. It's just so close. You know, it feels like we're right there and just need to put a full 60 together consistently and the team can win a lot of games." He said, "I just hope we peak at the right time." I said, "Well, last year we peaked in December and January and that didn't work out very well for us. So who knows? Maybe we'll but you can't wait too long cuz otherwise you won't be in the playoffs and it doesn't matter if you peak in March if you're 10 games out of the playoffs."
So, but other than that, yeah, I'm doing all right. Let's take a look at the, so we had four games in 5 days. I had a feeling that if we didn't win early, we were really going to struggle because that's a hectic schedule. That trip to Kalamazoo, that is a long bus ride. That's a long car ride, let alone in a bus.
Yeah, lost 3-0 to Gwinnett at home on Wednesday and then looked awful doing it. And then Friday, the home game against Kalamazoo, the team lost 3-2, but it was a really well-played game. It was evenly played. Both teams looked good. I thought it was certainly the best game the Icemen have played all season so far. And I think if they play like that, you know, if they continue to play like that, they're going to win a lot of games. But then they turn around and lost Saturday at Kalamazoo 4-1 and lost Sunday at home against Gwinnett 5-2. And just, I don't want to say the wheels are falling off, but the fans think that they are.
And, you know, one of the things we talked about, there's a lot of fair weather fans in this town. And a friend of mine, Chad Burley, talked about, I mean, 2 years ago, he said, "I hope this team does well because this team, if a team doesn't do well, this city has a tendency just to turn on them and leave them." And already you start seeing the signs that people are giving, and I'm not saying giving up, but you know, a fair weather fan is still a fan, but you know, the true fan is one that can watch this expansion team. We are, in my opinion, another year of expansion, and just celebrate the good stuff and just say, "Hey, they're going to get better," because, like you said, you can't really get much worse.
Yeah, and I think people throw around the term "true fan," and I'm not a big fan of that. That term. I'm not a true fan of the term "true fan."
I see what you're saying.
Because I think, you know, everyone is a fan in their own way, and you don't want to tell someone how to be a fan. But at the same time, I think people around here, but in general in sports, people are too quick to react to the extreme to anything that happens. You have to remember, it's a long season. You win games, you lose games. No one's going to go winless for a whole season, in hockey at least. No one's going to go the whole season and win every game. And you have to keep that in perspective, that there's going to be ebbs and flows in the season, some peaks, some valleys, you know, and some of the peaks may be high and some of the valleys may be low, but you can't just completely fly off the rails any time the team loses a few games or wins a few games. You got to keep your highs in perspective, but you got to keep your lows in perspective too.
And I'm not trying to tell anyone how to think, but I still really struggle with the fire Rich Crom movement that a few people are touting, and the fire Todd Robinson. These guys, Rich Crom, 500 NHL games in his career, multiple winning seasons as a coach at this level, whether it was the IHL or the CHL or whatever. And Todd Robinson, he will be one of the greatest players that will ever have played in this city. He is that good. They're struggling right now. He plays a puck possession style of hockey. It can look slow at times. He's really struggling to find line mates and chemistry. That is no doubt. But it will work out eventually.
Yeah, Todd so far has, I think he would probably be the first person to tell you, he hasn't played well. He's only got 4 assists. He's a minus 11, which is the worst on the team. But he's not alone.
I'm not much worse than that in the men's league.
It's not like he's the only player on the team that's not living up to expectations. I looked at the numbers, and the three other veterans on the team, the guys that are officially a veteran by ECHL rules, which they're all defensemen, Phil Plante, Matt Jens, and Dan Tatro, the three of them are a combined minus 11 themselves, and they only have 1 goal and 4 assists. So it's not like Todd's the only guy who's got expectations that isn't living up to them.
Looking over the weekend, we lost to Gwinnett. The Kalamazoo, once we lost the first one, I knew that bus ride was going to be rough. And then Gwinnett on Sunday, you wanted to talk about discipline issues. Gender with the match penalty elbow, we're waiting to hear today, which is Tuesday because we're recording.
Yes, in the interest of full disclosure.
What his suspension's going to be. Even Beaulieu got gashed late Sunday night and got tossed, and there's some concern whether he might get fined or suspended as well.
Yeah, Sunday at the end of the game, I didn't see what exactly happened. I believe he thought that, and if he felt it, he knew that he caught a high stick to the face in the final minute, and it didn't get called, and he chirped the ref and got 2 for unsportsmanlike, and he kept chirping the ref, and he got a 10-minute misconduct, and he kept chirping the ref, and he got a game for abusive officials. So that type of stuff is going to happen. You're going to have guys get frustrated, and especially at the end of a game, if the team's lost and you haven't played well and you take a stick to the face and it doesn't get called, you have every right to be upset. But at the same time, you have to know that if you keep chirping the ref after he's already given you a 2 and a 10, good things aren't going to happen.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the only one. Yeah, you mentioned Dan Gender in Kalamazoo on Saturday, took a match penalty in the final minute of the game, checked somebody in the head, which is a point of emphasis with all the talk about concussions and everything. And he missed Sunday's game, and we're hoping, and it sounds like Crom seems to think that the league will basically just give him time served, and Sunday will serve as his 1-game suspension, because it was initially announced as suspended indefinitely, which is the case usually with match penalties. Pending league review, they suspend them indefinitely. And I would imagine he'll be back on Friday, but you can't have that type of stuff. You can't be mouthing off that much to the refs to where you get a game misconduct in the final minute of a game, because you could jeopardize your next game eligibility. And also, in the game on Sunday, Cody Beach put the team down for 5 minutes, shorthanded for 5 minutes, and got himself ejected as well. One of the Gwinnett players cross-checked him, and the referee was going to call it. And Beach took exception and started punching the guy. And when the Gwinnett player turtled, which, you know, that's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah.
But when he turtled, Beach has to know, that's it, I'm done. You got to stop. And he didn't. He kept going. And he got 2 minutes for roughing and a 5-minute fighting major and a game misconduct for being the aggressor. Because even once the linesman jumped in, he kept trying to push the issue. And, you know, that rule's on the books. Everybody knows what that rule is. If somebody is not a willing combatant, you've got to stop. And if you want to be an enforcer in professional hockey, you can't do things like that. Because, A, nobody's going to want to fight you if you have that reputation. And, B, if you continue to do things like that, you keep putting your team at a disadvantage. Now, thankfully, on Sunday, the Icemen killed off that 5-minute penalty. But, you know, how much did it take out of them? Because
yep.
They killed off the 5 minutes, but then after the 5-minute kill was over, they gave up a couple of goals a few minutes later.
And it's really hard to score when you're shorthanded. That's 5 minutes for the team that's already struggling with scoring. Being shorthanded 5 minutes doesn't help. And Crom is not a fan. He likes his enforcers, but they've got to be disciplined. And that's why whether we stayed in the E or stayed in the C this year or moved to the E, Mike Scroy wasn't coming with us. He was reckless. He was out of control in those playoff games, and he was out there, and penalties were getting called, and he evened up. You know, we had power plays on ready to go, the delayed penalty called, and then he went out there and swatted someone and gave him away, and he sat the bench, and he was gone.
Yeah, Scroy was like that at times, and I think that's also why Steve Macway and Mario Ballard did not come back this year. I think they were maybe not to the same extent as Scroy at times, but they also could be that loose cannon kind of player where something would happen and there may be a power play coming to us, and then they react and the power play goes away and they end up putting us shorthanded even by not being disciplined. And you can't have that. Like you said, when you're having trouble scoring, you're going to have even more trouble scoring if you're shorthanded all the time.
Definitely. You want to talk a little jersey update here, the jersey auction?
Yeah, we had the jersey auction on Friday on Pink the Rink night. Wrote down the numbers, and last week we talked about who we thought would be the top draw, and your guess was Cody Beach, my guess was Matt Jens, and we were both wrong. So we need to throw ourselves under the bus a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, no, this radio show is all about accountability.
Yeah, the top draw was actually Rob Madore, which we did talk about goalies, and we figured they would go well, and they both did.
See, I don't really want to throw ourselves under the bus for that because we did say
that's true.
Goalies are weird, and people that love goalies are weird.
That's true. So, yeah, I guess we were right in a way. Yeah, well, let's give ourselves some credit.
So let's just, like, after we take the goalies out, who was the top one?
Madore was at 1,075. Karpovich was at 850. He was the third largest. The number two and the top non-goalie was Todd Robinson.
Impressive.
So yeah, he was. His jersey went for 950. Beach was next at 800, and then Aaron Jens at 775. Altogether, they raised over $15,000. The jerseys averaged more than $700 a piece. Some other notables: Matt Jens went for $725. Mark Cody went for $700. Beaulieu went for $600.
Now, so Aaron Jens went for more than Matt Jens?
Aaron Jens went for more
is
than Matt Jens.
Is he cuter than Matt? Or is he a more talented musician?
I am not of the orientation to pass judgment on that. I don't know. You'll have to ask some of our female fans.
Let's get that one out there. Because it just kind of surprises me that Matt Jens, a returning player, and his younger brother would sell a jersey more than he does.
But I think jersey auctions, when you're not talking a silent auction, when you're talking about a live auction, there's a lot of other things that come into play. Is it early in the auction or is it late in the auction? How many people have already spent their money? Or do they have their money in hand, but they want to wait and see how other jerseys are going to go? And the other thing is, you have to consider a number is only going to go high if there's multiple people wanting that jersey. You know, if there's one person that's willing to pay $1,000 for someone's jersey, but no one else is, they may get it for $500. But if there's two people that are willing to pay $750 for someone's jersey and they get into a bidding war, they could end up driving the price up beyond where they originally thought they were going to be. So I don't read too much into that, but at the same time, I'm sure within the Jens family that'll be a little bragging rights here. But you look at the individual numbers, and it's kind of amazing. I can't fathom the idea of paying $1,000 for a hockey jersey. I don't care whose it is.
I really struggle. I can't pay $180 for just a replica.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the $70 one.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. But with an auction like that, you look at it, they raised $15,000, and I think the team said half the proceeds were going to go to Komen.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's, you know, so you're talking over $7,500 to Komen just for selling some jerseys, which is pretty awesome. And another note on jerseys, and you were at the game on Wednesday when the Icemen wore the sky blue third jerseys.
Uh-huh.
Can we throw someone under the bus for putting blue numbers on a blue jersey?
Sure.
I don't know whose decision that was, what designer decided that it was a good idea to put blue numbers on a blue jersey. But when I'm up in the press box trying to figure out who's winning face-offs and who's taking shots, it is impossible to see blue numbers on a blue jersey from that far up.
It is disappointing that these designers and fashion people put more credibility in the 8,000 people that are going to buy the jerseys than the seven of us up in the press box.
I know. What is their problem?
I need to have
priorities.
I want every number trimmed in half-inch white around it just to read it as a broadcaster, whether it's the high school football team or whatever else. So.
Yeah. We had that last year, wasn't it? The camo jerseys that they did where they were dark green camo and they had black numbers on them?
Yeah, the first year at Swanger two years ago. Yeah, that was really, really tough to see.
Yeah, those were not good. I like the blue
jersey. Ficarelli went crazy. He was yelling at Brian Ball.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, how am I supposed to broadcast a game?
Hang on. I want to hear that again. Give me some more Fick.
No, that was just sinuses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Patafi's boy, Caden? Oh, man, he's got Fick down.
Really?
To the point that I'm trying to get him on the radio.
I think maybe the... that might be an opportunity. I think the Iceman Maniacs Booster Club needs to do a Ficarelli impression contest.
Yes.
Winner gets a free cowbell.
I like it. So next up in our segment here, Shockers, hockey, rock song of the week.
This is more upbeat than last week. Last week we did Spirit in the Sky in honor of Lane Goodwin. And speaking of which, not to get off topic, but that's what we do here.
Don't make me cry.
That's my goal. At Friday's game, since it was Pink the Rink night, the focus was on breast cancer. But in addition, childhood cancer got a moment in the spotlight because Lane Goodwin's mom and family were there at the game. And in the third period, Stephen Rickard found them with the assistance of the Icicles. And... Lane's mom was named the sweetheart of the game, and Lane's little brother was named the Blizzard's Buddy's kid of the game. And they were shown on the Jumbotron, and the crowd gave them a standing ovation, and I don't think there were many dry eyes in the house. It was a really cool moment.
All right. Iceman family.
Yeah, what we were talking about.
Thing. Yep.
Yeah, all right, now we're going to have to take a break while Derek cleans up the keyboard and his microphone. There's just... So anyway, after we paid tribute to Lane last week, we're back to the upbeat this week. A fun song I have on tap since today, the airing of this episode, is Halloween. This week's song is a classic that everyone loves to sing along to, at least the chorus. And this is Ghostbusters by Ray Parker Jr.
you gonna come?
And we're back. Dirty D and the Shocker here on Iceman Insights. Michael Shockley, the senior writer and webmaster for Evansville, or check that, IcemanManiacs.com. So,
don't make me throw you under the bus.
Yeah, again.
We had a little assist there on our intro for the song, too.
Yes, little Ivy Spivey hanging out with all kinds of Halloween cookies.
Better look out. That was pretty good. She might replace you as host of this show.
I keep trying. I'll be fine with that. So we got two games coming up. I'm going to throw this out here. We're going 2-0 this weekend. I think, and the biggest thing, I keep preaching it, I know, a week of practice. I mean, these guys had to have been exhausted Monday morning after 4 games in 5 days. But you get practice time Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm sure they'll do a little optional on Friday before the game. They'll be able to gel and everything else, so I think we go 2-0 this weekend.
I think you better be ready to eat your words next week. I think 1-1 is certainly possible. I'm not. I don't have great feelings about 2-0. I do think the Friday game, it's a home game. It's against Wheeling. They're 2-3-1, so obviously they're not a juggernaut at this point. I think that's a winnable game. I think Saturday at Toledo, that's going to be tough. They're 4-2. That's a home game for them. And they draw well. They've been up near the top in attendance the last few years. So I don't know that Saturday is going to be an easily winnable game. Not that any game is easily winnable, but I think of the two, Friday is certainly the more likely win. I think they have to get a win at home sooner or later because you've got this front-loaded schedule where there's a lot of home games early. I think 8 of the first 11 games this season are at home, and so far they're 0-5. And you have to start winning games at home because road games are harder to win. And
especially for us, Patafi brought up a couple of weeks ago, we are the only team in the central time zone in this league. So anytime we go to visit somewhere, we're losing an hour of sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, and not that buses are great for sleep anyway.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, that does come into play. You look at the division and you go, oh, well, all the teams that are close to us, you know, all the teams that are in our division are 5 to 7, 10 hours away. But even if they're not that far of a drive, you do have that time difference, and that certainly comes into play.
I know it well because I have family in Michigan. And so you either drive up through Fort Wayne and past Kalamazoo and over, or you drive up through Ohio to get to Toledo. And after 7 hours to jump out and be ready to skate a three-hour game it's definitely difficult.
Yeah. I think people sometimes kind of underestimate how much the bus time does affect things. Just think about when you go on a family vacation, even if it's not a vacation, if it's just a day trip, if you drive over to St. Louis or up to Indy, think about after that three-hour drive, you get out of the car and you feel like you need an hour just to limber back up and get ready to go wherever you're going to go. So when you're spending 7 hours on a bus the night after playing a hockey game, and you got to get out and play another hockey game, it's a tall order.
One of the things we thought about talking about, and but Rich Crum got ahead of us, was we wanted to talk about today about changes we'd make in the lineups or whatever else, and then Crum on Friday totally redid the lineup. But some of the questions for our listening audience is, if you had to do it all over again with what you know right now, would you have stayed in the CHL or would you have moved to the ECHL and basically be an expansion franchise for this year? Would you still be affiliated with two teams? Everyone was freaking out on Saturday. We get the report that we got two new guys being sent to us. They got to go in the lineup. So people are forced onto reserve so that that these guys can play. Nigro gets benched. Why is he benched? Why is he not playing? Well, because Peoria doesn't want him playing 4 games in 5 days. So as the rest of the team is playing 4 games in 5 days, they're taking care of their player and say, and they told the Iceman he can't play 4 games in 5 days.
Yeah, I think people need to, again, look at the bigger picture. That, yeah, if you stay in the CHL last year, you maybe win a lot of games. You may have had more players come back, but you're probably not going to be affiliated. And you may be going down with a sinking ship, or at the very least, a ship that's treading water. Whereas I think long-term, the ECHL is definitely the league to be in. It's a better situation. You're in an affiliated league. It's better for marketing purposes. You're going to see better players. But it's a case of you have to keep in mind that there are going to be problems when you make that adjustment. We are an expansion team. This may be the team's fifth season. It's the team's third season in AA hockey, but it's still the first season in the ECHL. By all indications, for all intents and purposes, this is an expansion team. And there's going to be growing pains to go with that. But you have to be willing to accept some short-term problems for the long-term gains that you're going to have of being in a more stable league, a larger league, a league where you're affiliated. And that is, too, a discussion to have about whether or not you want to still be affiliated with two teams. I think it's hard to judge anything because of the lockout this season. It's tough to look at the way we're going to see so much turnover and say that's how it will always be if we have two affiliates. Personally, I think long term, it probably is better to just have one affiliate. That way you minimize the turnover to an extent, and you can be more focused on trying to make one affiliate happy, because right now the Icemen have got so many guys down from both St. Louis and Columbus that it's tough for Crum to juggle the lineups and get everyone in and get everybody action, because these affiliates want to see their players play. And Rich doesn't necessarily have to play all of them every game, but at the same time, there's only so many spots to go around. Yep. And if you want to play all the guys that the affiliates have sent you, then you got to sit some of your own guys, which you may not necessarily want to do either. So I think in a perfect world, you'd like to use this season as a judge of whether or not being affiliated with two is going to work. But I don't think the lockout really affords you that opportunity. I think we may see two affiliates again next season just so they have another year to judge it. But you never know. They may decide we like one over the other, or we like the players we're getting from one over the other, and we may just see one affiliation next season. But who knows? We may see none. You never know. They're always one-year deals like we talked about before. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, and I think the roller coaster of transactions is probably long from over. We're just now we're still on the lift hill.
Did you want to talk about some new guys that we had come into town?
Yeah, since we talked last week, we were talked a little bit about Nigro, the forward that came down from St. Louis and Peoria, but he's not going to be here. He was just here on a rehab stint, and the Blues called up Tyler Shattuck to replace him in Peoria. I thought Nigro looked good. He looked like a player that belongs at the next level. So as soon as I saw him, I didn't expect him to stick around for long. He was down here. He suffered a concussion in the first preseason game in Peoria, so it was just a matter of shaking off the rust and getting back into game shape. And I figured he wouldn't be here for long. But it was nice to see him while he was here.
Yep.
Then we also got a couple of new defensemen sent down from the Columbus Springfield affiliation. They debuted on Saturday at Kalamazoo. The one that I think struck both of us as being the perhaps better on paper, at least, is Austin, I don't know how to say his last name, Madieski, something like that. We'll just call him Austin.
Cool.
He's 6'2", 200 pounds. He was a fifth-round pick in 2010. This is his rookie season, and he had a five-year stint in the Western Hockey League in Major Junior in Canada and put up really strong numbers. His last year in juniors, he had 50 points from the blue line in 70 games, which is very solid.
Yep.
So I think he's certainly got a lot of talent and a lot of potential. It's just going to be how does he adjust to the pro game.
And did he get his first assist on Sunday on the power play?
I think he might have, yeah.
I know he got his first assist. I just can't remember if it – yeah, it had to have been Sunday.
I think it was Sunday. And then the other defenseman sent down by Columbus was Will Weber. He's a 6'4", 226-pounder, big dude. And he looks big on skates, too.
Awesome.
He was a second-round pick in 2007. This is his rookie year as well. He spent 4 years playing college at Miami of Ohio. He didn't have
much. Which is a really good program.
Yeah, that's a really good program. He didn't have much in the way of offensive stats at Miami, but it's tough to judge defensemen offensively in college because the games are played so tight a lot of times. So he didn't stand out to me positively or negatively on Sunday. And when you're talking a rookie in your first home game, that's probably a good thing.
Yep.
You know, you don't want to make a spectacle of yourself in a bad way. So if you just blend in, that's a success for your first game.
I thought that we've got plenty of offensive defensemen. I'm glad if we can get a couple of more big, solid guys in there. We had a little discussion on Facebook about D pairings. And I've always liked having a stay-at-home guy paired with a rusher. I don't like Plant and Jens playing together because they're so similar in their playing style. That can be tough as a defenseman to know. You know, I like to pinch all the time, and he likes to pinch all the time. So then we don't pinch, and then we're giving up loose pucks and vice versa. Then we both pinch at the same time, and then we're caught.
Yeah.
So I always like that one guy who knows his role is to stay back so that you're – puck mover, mobile guy can be the game changer.
Yeah, and that's where the value of a guy like a Nick Schneider that we've had in past seasons or a Jesse Perrin that we have this year really comes into play. That if you have a defenseman who is really about starting the rush and pinching in to try to keep the puck in, you have to have him with a guy like that who is defense first. And you know, it sounds silly to the untrained eye to say, well, he's a defenseman, he should be defense first. But there's so many things that go into playing defense that there are offensive defensemen in there, defensive defensemen, and I agree with you 100%. It really helps if you have three of each so that you can have balanced pairs. On Sunday, once the two guys came down from Columbus, the pairings, Crum shuffled them up and put the Jens boys together, which could be interesting because they do play a similar style. And then the other pairings, he had Plant with Marieski, Austin.
The big M.
Yeah, the big M. And Tetro was with Weber. And then the scratches were Perrin and Blomqvist. And then you still have Overmeyer waiting in the wings on the reserve list, too. So there's a lot of D in town. It's just a matter of getting them all in the lineup, finding the right pairings. And I know Perrin had been fighting. He was a little banged up. He wasn't injured, but he was bruised and beaten from some of the other action. So maybe he got scratched in part just to heal up a little bit.
Yep.
But if I was making my choice, I would not scratch Perrin if he's healthy, because I think that's the kind of stay-at-home defensive defenseman that we have to have in the lineup, especially for the PK.
See, and I feel the same way about Blomqvist.
Yeah.
He's got that big size, and that's a guy. You know, 4 games in 5 days, and you're talking about affiliations, you got to get everyone in.
Right.
But he's a guy at the end of the season. I want him, you know, I could see putting him with Plant on the very first pairing there.
Yeah.
With the veteran and the big guy that's going to make people pay.
Yeah. Whatever the case, they got to find something that works to improve the special teams on both ends, because the penalty kill is operating in an atrocious 70% kill rate, and the power play is no better. It's only at 12.5%. So yeah, I give Rich credit. He's shuffling things around trying to find something that works. There's a lot of parts and pieces, and it's just a matter of putting the puzzle together the right way and finding pieces that fit. And how successful this team is going to be is going to depend on how quickly he can find combinations that work, because so far, obviously, that hasn't really been the case. You're 0-6-1. You're the last team in the league with a win, and that's a year after being 6-0-1 out of the gate and being the last team to lose. So It's certainly not the start anyone wanted, but I still think it's too early to just throw your hands up and say it's over. This team's not going to win any games. This team's out of the race. I'm not going to go the Jim Mora route and say playoffs yet. But I think if...
But come back next week.
Yeah, if we're still having this discussion in 2 or 3 weeks, then you may have to start saying, okay, let's forget about the playoffs. Let's worry about winning some games. And if the playoffs come, they come. But people need to understand that, yeah, we've played 7 games. This is a 72-game season. It's not like the team's going to go 0-70-2 or something. There will be wins. The potential is certainly there. And I think Friday was the big telltale, that the team played really well against Kalamazoo. And I think, to borrow something from ESPN Radio, Scott Van Pelt always says, don't judge a team by how they lose games they maybe should win. Judge a team by how good is your good. And I think the Icemen showed on Friday that their good can be really good. It's just a matter of showing that consistently, doing it against teams that you should beat, because Kalamazoo is a really good team. And
yeah,
sometimes you play a very good team, and if you play well, you still get beat. But if you play the way that you played Friday against Kalamazoo, against a team like a Gwinnett that's maybe not quite as talented, although now they're in first place after a solid weekend, it's early in the season, things happen. If you play that way against teams like Gwinnett and Friday against Wheeling, a team that's 2-3-1, you can win games.
I'm actually going on record 3-0, because I believe they will also win Tuesday in the elementary school game. So that's my prediction.
I think that
that one's just a givey. The team, you know, you want to talk about a busing situation there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when they're coming in, but we've got all the advantage on Tuesday morning, 9:45, with all of our kids in the building.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I like that they moved the start time up to 9:45 this year. Last year they started at, I think, 10:30. And because of the way the EVSC bus schedules worked, like 80% of the crowd left before the third period.
Yep.
Because they had to get back to school. So they moved the start time up this year so that they'll actually hopefully be able to stick around for the whole game, which will be nice, because if it's a close game, you'd like to have that energy in the building. Last year, the third period was weird. It was like playing in Dayton or something.
Yeah.
Where there was no fans. It was odd. But it'll be fun. I liked the Education Day game last year. It was a lot of fun to see all the kids having a good time, and they were getting into the game. And I was pleasantly surprised by how they picked up when to cheer and when to be quiet, and they kind of got into it. So,
and we had the fight right off, early in
yeah.
the first period, and all the kids were going crazy. That was
it's always fun when you got a group of 70 or 80 kids sitting right down in the 100 level, and there's a fight right in front of them. It's like that's the memory for a lifetime for them. So Tuesday, it's a cool promotion. I like the Education Day game. Something fun for the kids to do outside of school. And I know there's some debate about, well, how educational is it really? But field trips have value, that I think there are things that you can learn when you're outside the classroom that you can't get when you're inside the classroom. And they have the Education Day pamphlets and stuff that try to tie into it and make it a little more of an educational experience. But it's more than anything, it's just about having fun.
I have no problem with it, because hockey's the most important thing in this life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how can it,
right.
They should be, they should be raised at the rinks.
Right. For one day out of the season, the schools actually have their priorities
yes.
in order.
I can't write any sermon without throwing hockey stories in it at my church, so it's just the way it is.
By the way, one other thing I wanted to mention, too. Friday, the game against Wheeling is mascot night.
Yes.
And if you've never been to Mascot Night, it's very interesting to see mascots from all over the place interacting. I know Blizzard will be there, obviously, and they usually get Evan and Eva from the Otters and various other local
I think
business.
Holiday World has sent
Holiday World sent
Kitty
one.
Claws.
Red Robin has sent one. The Cal from Chick-fil-A comes, and Ellis Presley from Ellis Park. But they announced yesterday, Monday, that Louis, the mascot of the St. Louis Blues, is apparently going to be in attendance.
Yep.
So, and they said they were trying to get Nash from the Nashville Predators as well. And if you've
what
never,
else are they got to do?
Yeah, exactly. What else are they? There's, I don't know. Are the mascots locked out?
Yes, I think they are.
If you've never been to a Nashville Predators game, whoever performs as Nash is top-notch. That's one of the best mascots in sports, so it'd be really cool if they can get Nash. But if not, if nothing else, at least they've got Louis, who's the Blues mascot, so maybe there will be some sort of affiliate mascot program that Louis and Blizzard will exchange ideas and talk about things they can do to make things tough for the opposition.
Do you think they'll play that mascot hockey game again at intermission?
Yeah, I think that was the plan that I heard, was that they're going to play broomball on the ice, which is always fun.
Yes, that was hilarious, especially when one fall, just catastrophic fall on the ice.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Well, my favorite was the first time they did that a couple years ago at Swander, when Blizzard was the only one who looked the least bit comfortable out on the ice and was more or less running the game out on the ice, and then halfway through the broomball exhibition, the broom fell off, like the head of the broom fell off of the handle. So Blizzard's running out around there with no broom, really. He's just got a stick with no blade or no broom or anything on the end of it, and he's trying to win, and I think he still won the game. But he's Blizzard.
Yep.
He's got home ice advantage.
Definitely. Definitely. You got anything left on that sheet of yours?
There's a whole lot of gobbledygook, and let's see. I don't think there was anything otherwise, just want to see the team put a full 60 together. I think the talent's there. I think Rich was right. You've got the pieces there. They're close. It's just a matter of put it together for a full 60 minutes. And if you can find some line combinations that work, and I think there's plenty of talent. It's just a matter of putting the pieces together the right way. And I think there's enough talent that this team could certainly go out and rattle off 3-4 wins in a row.
He is Michael Shockley, senior writer and webmaster for IcemenManiacs.com. So make sure you check out the website for all the information and correct scores. Sorry, Courier Press. Against Gwinnett last week, It was 3-0,
yeah.
Not 3-1.
Well, they're just trying to make it seem a little nicer.
Yeah.
There was one of the writers, whoever was writing that for the Courier, was sitting up next to me in the press box. And late in the third period, he turns and looks at me and goes, "I don't know what I'm going to say to make this seem any better than it is." I said, "Well, if nothing else, there aren't many people here to see this debacle," because the crowd was less than 3,000. I think it was announced at 2,900 something.
Yeah.
I don't think it was even that big. So at least there weren't that many people.
It was probably 800, and the best quote I heard on that from Janine was, "They are also counting the radio audience."
Yeah. I don't know, do they have that many people that listen on the radio?
It's easier to prove that than to prove that the 1,000 that were there magically turned into 29.
Yeah,
but that's a whole other game in and of itself. So.
At least there weren't many people, and it was a short game. That game ended at
9:20
or something. Yep. That was a really fast game, mercifully.
Yes.
So, but, it's going to be interesting. I wonder how many fans we'll have at the game on Friday. I know Education Day will draw well.
Yep.
Last year they had over 6,000, but Friday, another week where we're up against high school football.
Yes, indeed, and Castle just keeps on winning,
yeah.
And that game is here. So
a lot of the teams here locally keep on winning. They're just not dropping out, so that's going to keep making these Fridays tough.
Fridays are tough. So anyways, he's Michael Shockley. Check him out at IcemenManiacs.com. This is Derek, and you got anything you got to say? Okay.
Nothing from Ivy, unfortunately.
We'll talk.
She's going to have to work on her timing if she wants to replace you.
Yeah.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.